life,
dignity,
security,
freedom,
respect,
justice,
equality,
remedy and protection,
fairness,
fair trial,
privacy,
right,
work,
peace,
losers,
men.
This is my mistake, let me make it good. I raised the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum,
identity,
family,
home,
conscience,
expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
leisure,
health,
education,
focus,
culture,
human rights,
charter dana,
solidarity,
responsibility.
You fill in the border. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted by Amnesty International volunteers. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. I'm Jim Hutchings, and with me is Caroline Cordiero and our special guests Kelsey Aitchison, and we'll be joined a little later by Rhonda Rosenberg, both from the Multicultural Council of Saskatchewan. We're here to talk about anti-racism, how to be an active ally, a workshop hosted by the Unitarian Fellowship of Regina this coming Saturday at the Unitarian Center. Welcome, everyone.
Hi.
I'm hoping that Rhonda can get here shortly, but in the meantime, Kelly... first mistake of the day. It won't be the last. Could you tell us something about the MCOS, Multiculturalism Council of Saskatchewan?
Sure. So I'm actually the Regina facilitator for the Multicultural Council of Saskatchewan's ICARE program. ICARE stands for Intercultural Connections and Anti-Racism Engagement. What we do is we like to bring settler organizations together, recently immigrated, newcomer organizations, as well as indigenous organizations together to help bring down those barriers, build community together.
Okay, and so what is your position actually?
So I'm a facilitator.
What
I do is I show up and I help facilitate conversations. Mm-hmm. A lot of that comes with trauma-informed care, being an active listener, helping to provide a safe space for people to deal with issues around racism and colonialism and decolonization. Those are all big topics that are very loaded. So part of our job is just making sure that people feel safe and comfortable and providing them with that education.
Okay. And what sort of background, where do you come from to be able to do these things?
That's interesting. I started doing this actually when I was 13. That's when I met Rhonda Rosenberg. Mm-hmm. She was already established and working in anti-racism education, and I was brought on as a youth leader once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where that started. I've always had a drive for justice and human justice and equality. So starting that at such a young age just helped foster that to bring it to a larger audience. I want a larger audience to be talking about these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the average person, I consider myself fairly average here, but the average person probably does not think of themselves as racist. And I think they may be kind of shocked to discover that maybe they are.
My favorite saying is, I'm not racist, but.
Yes.
That is one of the most loaded sayings. People have inherent biases. That's just something that we do. We group ourselves according to how we feel safe, and oftentimes we feel safe with people that look like us. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. However, when you pigeonhole yourself into that without looking at any other variables, you tend to fall into a sort of closed-mindedness. I'm not going to say full-on racist, because people can unlearn those behaviors. I feel racism comes with a lot of hate. And I don't think that people are inherently hateful. Mm-hmm. That's learned.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just thinking about something that I was very surprised about in the last few years. The organization, one of the organizations I belong to, of course, is Amnesty International. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of shocked to discover that Amnesty discovered that they had racism problems in our head office.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big problem, and it took a long time to make progress. They have made progress, and I think they're definitely on the right track. But kind of shocking when you're a human rights organization, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you discover, oh, we got our own problems.
Yeah, actually, at our most recent AGM, that is something we talked about, is anti-racism and multiculturalism.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of multicultural and human rights organizations, you're not thinking that there's racism there.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who have come together in the hopes for equality. However, we're seeing that racism is incredibly systemic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily, oh, I don't like that person because of the color of their skin.
Right.
It comes down to economics as well. It comes down to where people live. That's a racial structure in itself.
Mm-hmm.
So there are organizations, there are businesses out there who aren't realizing that they're still working within a racist model.
Mm-hmm.
And undoing that is, I mean, you have to go back sometimes decades within an organization to see how that started.
Mm-hmm. Well, you look at pictures of the people involved with, especially the leadership of some organizations, and you realize, there's a bunch of old white guys there. And, you know, is that really representative of society?
Right. And that's kind of an issue that we have with boards is, people will handpick boards, and boards look the same. Boards are what drive organizations.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have like such a narrow board, how are they actually serving your organization? Are you taking in those factors of people being from different backgrounds? Are you taking in accessibility factors? Even gender issues.
Mm-hmm.
Boards should be inclusive of absolutely everybody, not just the one person they're serving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you call any particular instances where people really, you know, people are basically, let's say they're basically good.
Mm-hmm.
And can you think of any particularly striking situations where people came to the realization that, gee, I thought, you know, I'm fine, I'm doing things right, mm-hmm. and they discover that they're not?
That's an interesting question, actually. I guess one of the most recent examples that I have is we were doing some work with the Regina Open Door Society.
Mm-hmm.
We were recently there for National Indigenous Peoples Day. And part of a realization that came out of that conversation was that the newcomers that were at the Regina Open Door Society really didn't understand how some of our Indigenous kin ended up on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And how colonialism ties into that, but how colonialism also ties into the reasons why they're in Canada. So it was one of those instances where it was, oh my goodness, I could very easily be that person, but I'm not, because mm-hmm. I experience life differently.
Right.
that was a very cool realization, because a lot of our newcomers are essentially taught upon arrival certain places they shouldn't go, certain places they shouldn't speak to, mm-hmm. or certain people they shouldn't speak to. So just creating the similarities between you come from colonization, we also come from colonization. How do we build a relationship, a respectful relationship out of that? And I think a lot of the newcomers really did just sit back and go, wow, okay, we are very similar here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I think a large part of what's going on too, I think of myself, I've come from small town Ontario, mm. and we got lots of people from small town Saskatchewan, and we all look the same, you know, and they haven't had to deal with, you know, meeting and working with mm-hmm. people who are really different from
yes.
themselves. And how do you kind of get people to recognize that change is required?
You know, I honestly think that people are aware that change is required. There is a fear in making change, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, people often tend to stick towards their groups, and stepping out of those groups can be very scary. It mm-hmm. takes a lot of bravery to do that, to get to know somebody that you don't understand, or who you've been told you shouldn't understand, right?
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think, like, a lot of our breaking down barriers is just, we have so many connections all over the city, all over the province. We just want to bring people together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anybody, like, come hang out with us. Let's talk about these things. Like, let's really make this not a practice of people sitting down and talking about their trauma, but talking about how we're surviving through these things, talking about how we're thriving as communities together and how we can share those with other communities as well.
Yeah, just, you know, I've been thinking too in Saskatchewan.
Mm.
I think there's a long way to go. You know, when I think of the prejudices that seem to still exist, and the people that don't realize that sometimes they do, though, they're quite happy with their prejudices. You know, that and they're comfortable with where they are, and they get themselves into a habit of, say, making fun of or whatever of the other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little hard to get them to realize that this really is not acceptable. This this doesn't work. How do you get through to those guys?
So I am mixed Indigenous, mixed European.
Hmm.
That's what I talk about. Is I wish I could be ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that there is bliss in ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
There's a point in my life where I could have continued living as a settler because mm-hmm. I am white passing for
sure.
an Indigenous person.
Yeah.
However, there's no way that I could possibly do that knowing that people I love are facing such injustice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it could be very easy for me to, well, I'm not going to say easy, but mm-hmm. living a white passing life can be very easy for people. But you can't just shut out what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
When you're able to sit down and talk to people and find those similarities with them, and like I'll say, I'm white.
Mm-hmm.
I have those stereotypes. I'm also Indigenous. I have those stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has them.
Yeah.
It's as easy as admitting it and then just working through it with somebody who can help you.
Right. So basically, you know, you can't unknow these things. You can't sort of ignore them.
No.
You know. And so I guess you have to get these people that are quite happy living the way they do and get them to realize, this really isn't fair what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And really I should change
mm-hmm.
to make things fair. That's the challenge when it comes right down to it.
It is. Living your day to day without acknowledging those things I understand why people do it.
Mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
100% do. Everybody is here trying to survive. Our society has made it very hard for everybody. It's just piled on to minority groups.
Mm-hmm.
So I do understand why people turn a blind eye. It is easier on ourselves to do that sometimes.
I was just thinking, I know people who do not listen to the news.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to know these things. They don't want to know about all the terrible things that are going on in the world. Well, why listen to the news? It just upsets me.
Mm-hmm.
So things like what's happening in Gaza, you know, and what's happening in Sudan and so many other places that we can name,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's happening in Venezuela, all this stuff, not to mention the stuff that has happened in Regina,
yes.
and in Winnipeg and in Vancouver. There's lots going on, and I think we need to be aware of them.
I agree. From the perspective of an activist, it's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
It's very exhausting. One of the things I spoke about recently is how do I protest the things going on globally when they're going on in my backyard?
Right.
You know, our people don't have clean drinking water. Our people are being scooped. You know, there's so many issues going on in Canada that are reflective of genocide.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There is ongoing genocide in Canada. So when the majority of protesters are the minority group, it's exhausting.
Right, right.
It's exhausting. I can look at Gaza and know that everything there is wrong, absolutely wrong. However, the same thing is happening here,
mm-hmm.
just on a less extreme scale.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So the focus on our backyard, like, we need to focus on that, you know? Global affairs are very important, absolutely, but what are we doing to take care of the people mm-hmm. in our immediate communities?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you'll have people argue, too, that, well, we don't want to be bothered with, not exactly not be bothered, we've got to look after our own problems mm-hmm. first. But that's not really true either, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, there are people who are absolutely desperate. We're not quite as desperate here.
Right.
You know, but there are desperate people.
100%, yeah.
Every so often you will hear, not so much in the news, but, oh, they found somebody in a bus stop and he died,
mm-hmm.
and people just walked by.
Yeah.
You know, and it happens more often than people care to admit.
It does. The history of colonialism in Canada has really brought our downtown Regina is sad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I used to live in downtown Regina 10 years ago, and the amount it's changed in 10 years.
Okay, Caroline, we haven't heard much from you lately. If you've got a question for Kelsey.
Yes, I do. Actually, I was a little bit afraid of talking because of my accent, but I think this is the place to show up all the accents, right? So, Kelsey, I was wondering here and listen to your story and everything that we have work here. I was wondering if you could talk with us a little bit about Saskatchewan. So in those years that you have been working with companies and groups mm-hmm. and doing pressure, so do you think that, have you seen some changes here in Saskatchewan? And I guess Saskatchewan is living also an increase of newcomers mm-hmm. and how are people dealing with that too?
Saskatchewan's really interesting. Kind of a decades-long joke is that Saskatchewan's like the Alabama of Canada. I think Saskatchewan has lots of work to do. However, if there wasn't change happening in Saskatchewan, we wouldn't be sitting in this room right now. So I think, you know, that doesn't seem profound, but the fact that we have so many organizations working together is steps towards change. We're always going to have a racism issue. We're always going to have issues supporting our Indigenous communities here, our newcomer communities here. But like you said, we do have a huge influx of newcomers. So the only hope that we have there is that we're going to be strengthening communities with their involvement here, and hopefully with their involvement in Indigenous communities in Saskatchewan too. It's all steps towards change. Like you said, you were worried of speaking with your accent here. Again, that's a step towards change. We're all sitting in a room together when once upon a time we shouldn't have been, right?
All right, and we're joined now by Rhonda Rosenberg. Thank you very much for making the time. I know what a busy person you are. Actually, Kelsey, Annalie, you're busy too. And I sprang this on you at the last minute. So I feel very fortunate to have the two of you here. And maybe, Rhonda, if you could maybe just outline how you came to be where you are, and then we'll talk about what's happening on Saturday.
That's a big question. And before I even start to answer it, I would say that we're really happy to be able to be here, mm-hmm. even though it was last minute, that we're being able to share some of the work that we're doing and mm-hmm. why we think it's important. How did I come to be where I am? That's a big question, but maybe I'll just make it smaller by, you know, I've been in this role with the Multicultural Council of Saskatchewan as the executive director for 14 years. Before that, I was working in these kinds of spaces as well. I was with the Saskatchewan Association for Multicultural Education. I worked in youth leadership with the United Way. I worked for Cornwall Alternative School. And when I was with SAME, Saskatchewan Association for Multicultural Education, one of the things that I did was work with the Regina Public Schools ACT, Anti-Racism Cross-Cultural Team Development Program, and which Chelsea and I worked together in. And that was, it was not the beginning, but it was a major aspect of my anti-racism learning journey, which is, we like to say, for me, very clearly a lifelong journey, that it's been something I've been engaged in, I think, since I was a kid in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. And realize that it's not going to end, right? Mm-hmm. That there are always things to learn. There's always, like, little aha moments of, like, oh, yeah, I've been walking around with that idea in my head that I learned maybe a long time ago, for a very long time, and, how, you know, now I'm being presented with people or ideas or information that it's like, I got to unlearn that and think about it in a different way.
Okay. All righty. So, this Saturday, we are going to have a workshop. And tell us about that. I think it's How to Be an Ally.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what if the people... Hopefully, we'll have lots of people. There's still time to sign up.
There's still time to sign up, yeah.
And so tell us about what's going to happen there.
So first, I want to say that the Unitarian Fellowship of Regina came to us and said, we want to offer a workshop on how to be an ally. And we don't just want it for our own community. We want to offer it to the community at large. And so I think that that's really good. And that, you know, like the idea was that we are really having a lot of questions about how do we, as people who can recognize our own privilege, learn to work in solidarity with those who are oppressed in a variety of different ways, in this case primarily by racism, but there might be other factors as well. And so so it's really important to look at that, especially when we understand that we carry privileges that are bestowed by the structures and systems that we live in, right? We live in a structure of white supremacy that has hierarchies of race and gender and class and education and faith and all kinds of different hierarchies, even hierarchies of humans over other beings in the world, right? Like that part of colonial ideology, that's part of it, right? And so we live in those structures, and those structures bestow privileges on some people based on those hierarchies through the oppression of others. And so we're going to start with those kinds of concepts and just make sure that we've got some common understanding of where these things come from, where the issues that we're dealing with come from. And then we're going to move from there to the So what can we do about them, mm-hmm. right? How can we show up? How can we learn to understand and see our own privilege? How can we understand other people's oppression in relation to it? How can we understand our own oppression in relation to privilege? And then how can we, how can we work in solidarity? How do we show up? How do we not just wear the right color on the right day? You know, it's not about bought the t-shirt. It's about how do we really, like, how do you show up and say, what can I do? Follow direction. Sometimes it's how do I shut up, too, mm-hmm. right? And especially, like, when you're like me as a person who is in a position of leadership, does carry privilege, has a voice with an accent that people are used to listening to. I mean, we look at accents and go, like, that means that other person speaks another language mm-hmm. even more fluently than the one that they're talking to you right now. But I have a voice that's listened to. And so sometimes it's how do I shut up? How do I pass the mic? Mm-hmm. So there are lots of ways. Or it can be, oh, you need me to put out chairs. Or I can wash the dishes. You know, like whatever is needed, showing up to be that ally. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you still have aha moments when you think, oh, that was racist?
Sometimes that was racist, or even more often, oh, that's a stereotype that's popping mm-hmm. in my head before mm-hmm. I'm thinking or acting. Yeah, like stereotypes, expectations, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. I'm trying to think of anything that I've said or done that I thought, oh, that was racist. And it's like, I feel like not a lot of that mm-hmm. stuff anymore, but mm-hmm. it's more mm-hmm. like, yeah, like definitely where I am in my journey is I've learned to enjoy those rather than be freaked out by them. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we start the journey, we want to really judge ourselves by those moments and get a little frozen and freaked out by them. And I've learned to be like, oh, no, this is learning. Mm-hmm. And this is like, and I have a choice about what I do with it, right? I'm not mm-hmm. stuck with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any tips for people that would like to learn a little bit more? So maybe they could go to the workshop on this Saturday, but is there other ways that we could learn a little bit better how to have the critical thinking about racism?
Yeah, I would say join a workshop. We'll leave our contact information, but absolutely reach out to the Multicultural Council, reach out to iCare. Part of our goal is to just, like I said earlier, help people feel safe in figuring this out for themselves, right?
I would say there's lots of resources out there. There yeah. are a lot of books to read, podcasts to listen to, movies to watch mm-hmm. that people can take responsibility for their own learning. One yes. of the things that I do caution people about is making the people who are oppressed responsible to educate those who carry privilege. Mm-hmm. And some folks, like Kelsey in this case, is mm-hmm. offering herself out there as, you know, being part of education. But there are people who are like, feel like they're taking on far too much of the emotional labor, yes. and especially the emotional caretaking of people who are having a lot of legit emotions about starting to recognize their privilege, starting to understand that they benefit from colonial systems, that there are a lot of emotions in that. One of those emotions is often guilt. Mm-hmm. We talk about guilt as being the glue that holds discrimination in place. And so one of the things that I find useful, especially for people who are racialized as white in this journey, is to feel that, think about it, think about where it comes from. But rather than getting stuck in it, move into a place of taking responsibility and taking action and not getting stuck in the guilt, because it really is the kind of emotion that weighs us down and prevents us from it makes us think, well, I can't do anything now because I'm the problem. Well, you don't have to stay part of the problem. We talk about it's never whiteness that makes people racist. it's racism that makes us white. It's racism that puts us into boxes and then stacks them in a hierarchy. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's helpful to remember just some of those little things are helpful for people, even if they're not coming to this workshop on Saturday, mm-hmm. but they, you know, like think about that and think about, okay, well, how do I benefit from the current system? Mm-hmm. And what can I do? Where can I go? You know, like to go to places like a friendship center, to go to mm-hmm. places like settlement organizations, to check out the lots and lots and lots of ethnocultural activities that mm-hmm. go on in communities. Do those things and be really brave mm-hmm. and talk to people when you're there. It takes some courage to talk, mm-hmm. but start having conversations. They don't have to be about very much. They can be very Saskatchewan conversations about snow.
Well, exactly. And I think people aren't their culture. Just because I show up and you can look at me and say, okay, this is an Indigenous woman, I am not powwows, I am not pipe ceremonies, I am not ribbon skirts. I enjoy music. I enjoy movies. I like sitting down with coffee. And that's a human thing. Approaching people just based on the fact that they may be their ancient culture is part of the problem. People are people. We enjoy the things that we like. We enjoy modern things, right? As much as I would love to talk about ceremony, because of colonialism, ceremony isn't a huge part of my life. So I could be approached as an Indigenous person, asked for education, but there's limited education I can give in terms of what it means to be traditionally Indigenous, right?
Hearing the two of you talk about this, this sounds like this is going to be a fun time.
Yeah, and Kelsey and I, because of the work that we did years ago with that ACT program, have and we're working with teenagers and younger kids at that time, have lots of activities that mm-hmm. that we get people up and moving, and one of the things that I learned in that process is that we carry a lot of knowledge in our bodies. Mm-hmm. as well as in our heads. And sometimes we really need to get out of our heads to be able to fully connect with each other mm-hmm. and to express some of the things that are going on.
Yeah, people use their bodies as boundaries all the time. And when you're able to mingle and start building trust and relationships in that sort of way, it really helps drive conversation too.
Okay, we've run out of time. So... let's talk about the actual event. It's going to happen this Saturday, November 4th, from 2 to 4 p.m. It's going to be at the Unitarian Center at 2700 College Avenue. And you have to register. It's free, by the way. Mm-hmm. This is mm-hmm. a free workshop.
Yeah.
And to register, I wish I had more details here, but I know that if you go to the Regina Unitarians website, Regina Unitarians, and then go to events... And it'll pop up right there, and you register through Eventbrite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you have any difficulty with that, you can just, actually, you could email me at jim.capriol, C-A-P-R-E-O-L, at gmail.com, and I can fix you up on how to do that.
And people can, we prefer people to participate in person. That's where you're going to get the fullest experience. Mm-hmm. There is an option to participate virtually as well.
Mm-hmm. I had forgotten about that, but that's true. And of course, Udonis is going to be joining us on Zoom as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be great as well. All right, well, I'd like to thank you both for being here. And we're going to close this episode of Human Rights Radio. And we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. If you have any questions about today's show or other human rights questions, email us at amnestyregina@hotmail.com. Past shows can be accessed by visiting humanrightsradio, all one word, .podbean.com, P-O-D-B-E-A-N. Pioneering human rights campaigner Peter Benenson often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."